At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
The NBA's version of March Madness, which really means the night-to-night jockeying for playoff positioning in both the West and the Eastern Conference, plus a deep dive on the intricacies of voting Most Valuable Player, Coach of the Year, and other year-end award categories, and a Pat Bev story as only Chris Haynes can tell it, all coming up next on the latest edition of This League Uncut.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Welcome to This League Uncut. In the world of 24-hour NBA news, you snooze, you lose. Chris Haynes, it's go time. Mark Stein, it's showtime. Boom shakalaka. This League Uncut is underway and on fire. This should be a good one.
Hey, everyone. Welcome in to another edition of This League Uncut. Mark Stein here with Chris Haynes. March Madness is fully underway, but I'm not sure that either one of your co-hosts on this trusty podcast can bring too much insight to you on the collegiate front. I am an absolute NBA snob who, once Cal State Fullerton season is over, my college season is over. So my college season ended March 9th. I do not fill out a bracket. Chris Haynes, how is your bracket looking?
There's nothing on it. I haven't filled out a bracket. I don't think I ever have. I just, you know, it's cool to see all the hoopla surrounding March Madness and seeing all these contests and all that stuff. And I like to hear about it. I like to hear about how everybody's bracket is, but I've never participated in one. I did want to years ago, a few years ago. I wanted to start a trend with my wife. She doesn't watch college basketball at all. I wanted to start a trend with her and where we would, you know, have our bracket, and the winner of the bracket would make the other do something that the other one wants done. But we never got that off the ground. So, but yeah, I mean, it's fun for everybody else, but I just never really got involved into it.
Yeah, we're kind of, I probably should move on because we're, people love this time of year so much, and I do not want to bring people down. I just,
and we're being Grinch. We're a couple of Grinches, huh?
Look, when my school's in it, you know, Cal State Fullerton has made the NCAA tournament 4 times in school history, 3 times in the 21st century. Whenever we make it, the 3 times we've made it most recently, I was there and proud to be in attendance. The first time we made it, I was just a young kid, so still years away from actually attending Cal State Fullerton. But yeah, let's just politely say that neither one of us is a college hoops expert. So let's move on to the NBA's version of March Madness, which certainly isn't known for capturing the nation's attention with the same fervor. But for our jobs, this is a very important time of year, because what's really happening, there's the jockeying for playoff seedings, which is a night-to-night scoreboard watch that is very important. Last night, we're recording this on Friday afternoon. Last night, I was watching Utah in Dallas to play the Mavericks, and just a stunning result, the Sacramento Kings on the second night of a back-to-back. But even so, you would have never expected Sacramento to lose at Washington, but the Kings did, and the Mavericks, with a win over the tanking Utah Jazz, were able to move up and take the number 6 spot, which is not just surprising, but look, it's only one night, it's only one game for both teams, but leading into next week, in your neighborhood, in your backyard, the Mavericks play the Kings in a huge 2-game baseball series, huge for the purposes of that race for number 6 in the West. The two kinds of March Madness that I'm really focused on, it's the jockeying for the seedings like that, and then the MVP race. This is when the MVP race really comes in to focus. We'll get to the MVP stuff in a minute, but you know, I know you're not even going to be there. You're on the road next week, so you are going to miss. I mean, these are two huge games. The way I look at it, really, in the West, we're talking about 3 races, really, in the West. You could even say maybe 4, because the Houston Rockets, insane. Even after losing Alperen Şengün, the Rockets have won 7 in a row. Okay, some of that is favorable schedule, but the Rockets have kind of thrust themselves into the play-in race when it was thought that their season was over. So we got these 3 races in the West. The race for the number 1 seed, Thunder, Nuggets, Timberwolves. Then there's this battle for 4-5 with the Clippers and the Pelicans. And the Pelicans had got within a half game, I think, or at least got within 1 game of the Clippers. And now the Pelicans are dealing with the terrible news that Brandon Ingram just went down with a hyperextended knee and will be out for at least 2 weeks before he's evaluated again.
Could have been worse, Ty. That looked bad.
It looked bad. So yeah, I mean, if it's only a matter of weeks, and if Ingram can indeed come back, not to say he'll be back in 2 weeks, but reevaluated in 2 weeks, certainly that was best case scenario news for the Pelicans. Then we got this race from 6 through 10, and again, if we want to extend it even a little further, 9, 10, 11, because Houston has now decided that their season is not over, and even without Şengün, the Rockets are still trying to sneak into the play-in zone. If I had to ask you, you know, who do you think gets the 6th seed in the West, which is so important because it keeps you out of the play-in tournament? So you got Dallas, Phoenix, and Sacramento. Those really are the 3 teams in battle for 6 through 8. Then the Lakers and the Warriors, it just doesn't look like they're going to be able to lift themselves out of the 9-10 range. So, you know, if you asked me before last night, I would have said Sacramento, but that was a bad loss for the Kings, who on top of everything, the Kings have also lost Kevin Huerter indefinitely to a separated shoulder.
It's tough, Don. It's tough. I mean, you got the Mavericks playing really well. The Pelicans with the Brandon Ingram. You wonder how that's going to affect the rest of their season. Phoenix, I can't get a firm grasp on if they're legit or not. They're good. They're a threat. But, will they play a consistent enough basketball through this last stretch to get into that sixth spot? I don't know. So if I had to guess, the Pelicans suffering that injury, Phoenix being kind of hit and miss, the Kings, I would probably lean towards saying I'll probably give the edge to Dallas. They're playing really good basketball right now. I had Jason Kidd on my Bleacher Report live stream.
I was just going to say, that's the reason you're picking the Mavericks at six, because Kidd on your live stream.
No, I'm looking at the Pelicans. I'm looking at the Suns and the Kings, and Mavericks are playing better ball than all three of those teams. So I think I have to go there. I just don't have the comp. I don't know. Can Pelicans sustain what they've been doing? Potentially, possibly. The Suns, again, they've been hit and miss. And the Kings right now, I don't know what's going on. So I think Dallas is probably the easiest bet right now. But, I don't know for sure. But I like the way they're playing. One thing about the Mavericks, man, they're athletic now. They got that aerial threat. You got Kyrie and Luka. Seems like they figured out a good balance of how to attack amongst each other. So they're looking good right now. But yeah, I am kind of pissed at the fact that I won't be able to be in attendance for the Mavs Kings matinee next week.
The schedule is bizarre. That basically on Monday night, Dallas and Sacramento are both playing. The Mavericks are in Utah. And then Tuesday night, on the second night of a back-to-back for both teams, the Kings will host the Mavericks for the first time. I think you will be in faraway Milwaukee, your second home, to cover Lakers at Bucks on Tuesday night. So you will miss,
second home, huh?
You will miss the first of those games. But then there's 2 days off. The Mavericks have two full off days in Sacramento. And then the teams play again on Friday night. Now, Sacramento has already won the first two meetings in Dallas. And so the Kings only need to win one of these two games to clinch the head-to-head tiebreaker. But again, there are so many interesting little intricacies when we look at this race. And just to hit you with a few of them, because this actually shocked me. My sub-stacking pal Tom Ziller came up with this one, which I was not aware of. Only three teams in the league this season have lost to Charlotte, Detroit, and Washington. Charlotte, Detroit, and Washington. Only three teams have lost at least once to those three teams at the bottom of the standings.
Are these good teams?
Only one of them is. Portland, Brooklyn, and
hold on.
Well,
Sacramento.
Sacramento. I gave it. Sorry. I didn't know you. I didn't know you wanted to do trivia time.
Yeah, I did want to do trivia, but I might have gotten Sacramento because you said Ziller.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that probably and that's gave
like,
it
that
up.
Just happened. But like if Sacramento doesn't get the sixth seed, they're really going to point to those losses to the Hornets, Pistons, and Wizards at what probably cost them. And now when you go to Tankathon and you look at remaining strength of schedule, Phoenix, with 12 games to go, has the second hardest remaining schedule in the league in terms of opponent winning percentage, 574. Sacramento is third, 13 games left for the Kings, a 562 opponent winning percentage. Dallas is all the way at number 22. The Mavericks' remaining schedule in their final 12 games, the opponent winning percentage is 477, and Dallas needs a 9-3 finish to get to 50 wins. So it's funny that you were talking about the Pelicans before, because I had basically, the Pelicans have been so good since February 1st, one of the best teams in the league with Zion Williamson playing as well as he ever has, and most importantly, just playing, just being out there. Zion Williamson, as we're recording this, has played in 58 games. His career high is 61. So he is on pace to set a career high in games played. People will obviously point to the fact that his rebounding numbers are still subpar. Zion is only pulling down 5.8 rebounds per game. That is a career low. But the ball's in his hands more. He's up to 5 assists a game. Scoring's a little bit down. His minutes are a little bit down. He's only playing 31 minutes a game compared to 33 minutes the previous two seasons. And there was a season in there that he lost completely to injury. But they've cut his minutes down just a little bit, and they're getting the most all-around productive play that the Pelicans have ever had for Zion Williamson, and he's headed for a career high in games played and his first playoff appearance. But I had the Pelicans, I basically had just considered them, they were going for fourth in the West to try to bump the Clippers down, and now with this Brandon Ingram injury, that could drag the Pelicans back down with the Mavs and the Kings and the Suns in the 6-8 race, because the Mavericks, as of the Friday standings, were only a game and a half behind New Orleans. I mean, this is what I'm talking about. This is, again, it's not the kind of March Madness that leads to office pools all over the country and commercials on your TV all day long. But every night in the NBA, you have to dial into the standings because weird stuff is happening and things are changing.
A couple of weeks ago, Stein, you know, talking about the Sacramento Kings, I don't have the numbers on me at hand right now, but, you know, they struggle against lower level opponents and they exceed against the high level opponents. So my brother, who Mark Kings, who covers the Kings for the Sacramento Observer newspaper, he asked De'Aaron Fox a couple weeks ago, does it concern you guys that you guys don't seem to play with the fervor needed and energy level needed to beat these lower level opponents, but then you guys rise to the occasion against high echelon teams? And Fox said, yeah, there is a concern. You know, we definitely need to take our opponents seriously. But, you know, on the other end, you know, we're playing good against high level teams. So if we get in the playoffs, I guess we'll be playing good. Because all the teams in the playoffs are good. So the Kings just want to get into the playoffs. They feel like they'll be in a good shot. They just got to get past the Washingtons and the Torontos and the Charlottes. Once they get past that, they feel like they'll be in good shape when they have to face Denver and OKC and Minnesota.
Well, I'm not sure that I can echo that pretty optimistic view from De'Aaron Fox. But look, he is correct. What you cited about your brother's reporting and just the Kings in general. Look, it is true. There are only 8 teams in the league with winning records against 500 or better opposition, and the Kings are one of those 8 teams. The Kings are 22-21 against 500 or better opposition. And again, that's true. There are only 8 such teams. Sacramento can feel good about being one of those 8. But like I said, if they end up 7th or 8th, or just, and look, if they end up 7th or 8th, they're going to have to go through the play-in round. And that play-in round is brutal. They're really going to rue the fact that they dropped games to the Charlotte Hornets and the Detroit Pistons, and on Wednesday night in Washington to the Wizards. Like, you just, you know, those are particularly damaging losses. And no bracket here. But scoreboard watching, and I feel like I click on the NBA standings like 10 times a day looking for hints, clues, trends that might tell us what's going to happen next. Because, I mean, this is another crazy stat. The Chicago Bulls, 34-35 before they lost Thursday night to Houston. So that loss dropped the Bulls to 34-36. But, you know, Chicago is now flirting with getting over 500. If the Bulls can finish 8-4, which is probably optimistic given their injury woes. No Zach LaVine, no Patrick Williams, obviously no Lonzo Ball. Although this week, our guy Casey Johnson in Chicago reported that there's some kind of the first rumblings of positivity about Lonzo coming back next season, which I think obviously people would love to see. But if, let's just say, the Bulls can muster an 8-4 finish. If they do, that will give the NBA 19 teams with a winning record this season. that would be a single season record. There has never been more than 19 teams in the NBA with a winning record in one season. I mean, even with 18, that would tie the record. So, I mean, that just think about that, that it's a 30-team league, and there's a chance that 19 of the 30 teams are going to post a winning record this season. It just kind of also shows you what the bottom of the league, the Charlottes, the Detroits, the Washingtons, the San Antonios have just been so bad and have struggled so much. You got to throw Portland in there as well. Whereas in Memphis, I think Memphis, which has had this hellacious string of injuries, obviously Ja Morant only playing in 9 games. The Grizzlies play super hard and are a tougher out, but the bottom 5 have just been such bottom feeders that it's certainly contributed to the possibility that 19 teams in the league with a winning record. It's probably going to end up 18. I don't think Chicago really has an 8-4 finish in them, but let's see. Let's see if they can surprise us.
I have a question for you regarding that. So the 18 or 19, whatever number it is, do you think the play-in format has anything to do with that?
Well, I think, yeah, I mean, I guess you would have to say more teams are trying, you know, teams that are in range of the 10th seed certainly have more incentive to play all the way through the 82-game finish line. And that's one of the things that the league definitely prioritized and why the league loves the play-in tournament, because, you know, the NBA loves to put out lines that say, so what is it now? 11 teams in the West, and this is actually, you know what, it's actually low for this season. Normally, at this point in the season, you know, the league would love to say, there are still 24 or 25 teams who are still alive, and it really is only, there are only 21 teams available for the 20 postseason spots. In the West, you know, again, Utah has, you know, they are not trying to win games right now. Memphis, Portland, San Antonio, they're already out of it. So in the West, Houston has made this unexpected surge that they're still in the play-in mix. But in the East, you know, we know our 10 teams. Mathematically, you could say Brooklyn is still in the race for the number 10 seed. But the Nets were 4.5 games behind number 10 Atlanta entering Friday's play. And the Nets have been trending in the wrong direction since December. So again, mathematically, the Nets are still in the race for a top 10 spot. But I really think in the East, our top 10 is decided. And again, in the West, I think most people thought that the top 10 was decided until the Rockets kind of went on this late surge. And I have to say, like, coach of the year, I don't think Ime Udoka is going to win. But to have Houston this competitive, this late in the season, he should at least be mentioned. You know, coach of the year, I think is probably, I would say, Orlando's Jamal Mosley, Oklahoma City's Mark Daigneault, and Minnesota's Chris Finch. I think they're probably at the top, but I would say Willie Green in New Orleans, Ime Udoka in Houston, JB Bickerstaff in Cleveland. I think these guys deserve shout outs too. And then, you know, Joe Mazzulla, kind of like Jason Tatum's MVP case, the Celtics are so good that in a weird way, that's probably going to work against Joe Mazzulla in the coach of the year chase. When it comes to coach of the year, we typically see teams that overachieve and surprise and win more than they were supposed to. It's rarely given to a team with the runaway best record. But I guess we'll see. I guess we'll see how it plays out.
All right. So I'm glad you brought that up. I agree with what you said just now. And it reminds me of a conundrum that I've been thinking about, contemplating over the last couple of days. So this new award has been around for the last few years, the Clutch Player of the Year Award, right? So just like all other awards, different writers or different coaches, or who's ever voting, they have different requirements. They're looking at different things. They evaluate the game differently. They're looking at different metrics. So to each his own. But with this Clutch Award, right? So you got leaders. You have players who are the leaders in clutch points. I believe Steph is number one. I want to say DeMar DeRozan number two, Damian Lillard maybe three. But my question to you, Stein, obviously there's value in having the most clutch points. But are you really clutch if your team doesn't make the playoffs? Because the way I'm looking at it, I would look at it, yeah, clutch points, definitely. You have to be top five clutch points. But then I'm looking at your team as well. And so how do you think most people, or how do you evaluate that role, Stein?
Normally, as you know, I like to think that I've got an answer for anything you're going to ask me, but it's interesting. I have not officially voted since 2017. The Clutch Award did not exist when I did it. So I have to confess, I haven't given huge thought to the Clutch Player of the Year, which is now heading into year two, I believe, because I never had to do it before. And so I didn't, you know, and then last season, I just remember De'Aaron Fox was a runaway candidate in that award. Like, it was just so obvious. Fox's clutch numbers were jump off the page. And so it was so obvious that he was going to win. But there has been a lot of DeRozan talk in the clutch player of the year conversation. And, you know, your point is obviously valid because the Bulls, whether or not they can get to 42-40, you know, at best, they're going to be a play-in team, so they might not even make the playoffs. And then, yeah, there's your conundrum. Should DeMar DeRozan be the clutch player of the year if the Bulls don't even make the playoffs? And ballots have to be turned in. April 15th this year is not only National Tax Day, April 15th is also the day that voters have to turn their ballots in, the day after the regular season. So the ballots for all the regular season awards will be turned in before the play-in round takes place. So we won't even know if the Bulls are a playoff team. I tend to think DeRozan is going to win it. I just keep hearing his name for this award more and more, but I don't know that I have a great answer on this one.
Yeah, that's one that I'm stuck with. And I haven't voted in the last few years, but I will vote this year.
You will. So there will be one official end of season awards ballot cast by the cast of this League Uncut.
Yes, I'll represent both of us. I haven't did much digging on numbers and stats and metrics yet, but I'm just trying to figure out for this award, should winning be a high priority or not? Because you can score a ton of points in the clutch and your team still loses. You know, you can score a lot of points from the 5-minute mark to the 2-minute mark, but the last 2 minutes or the last 1 minute, you go 0-for.
Well, look, I think winning and success should and has to be a priority if we're talking about clutchness. Can't we make the case that the Bulls have been shorthanded all year long, no Lonzo Ball at all, barely any Zach LaVine. And so DeMar DeRozan has had to carry a huge load without the two guys that were supposed to start next to him in the backcourt. And I would say he's been clutch enough to deserve it, even though the Bulls are, again, just a 34-36 team.
Okay, I'm not disqualifying DeMar. I'm not. I'm trying to, for the first time, having to vote and evaluate this award process. Like, I'm trying to figure out, like, what do I really value or what should be valued when it comes to this award? So using your example, you saying, hey, DeMar is doing a hell of a job with the team that he has available because a lot of their big guns haven't been able to suit up. Okay, now take a player who's averaging 35 for the season. He's clearly probably the best player in the league, but his team hasn't shown up. He's had key players injured. But you can make a case that he's the MVP because he's the best player. So I don't know that I buy credence to that argument, Stein, of a person is doing, you play with what you have. You play with what you have. I don't know that I'm evaluating based off of who's not in the lineup. You play with what you have. and the results speak. So again, I'm not disqualifying DeMar. I'm trying to figure out, okay, how do I evaluate this award? How do I evaluate, like, what really matters?
I'm glad it's you voting and not me.
I'm sorry. You know, I want to do my due diligence. That's all. This is just a tough one. Because if you know, you can be clutch, Stein, again, like you said, you can be clutch, but your team is not in the playoff picture. I'm like, were you clutch enough? Like, I don't know. I'm just thinking out loud.
Look, clutch is a hard one. And again, I'm fully admitting here that I haven't studied it super closely or formulated what my philosophy would be on it because I've never had to do it. Whereas, you know, MVP, even though I have not voted, this will be the seventh year in a row that I haven't officially voted, but I do have a better idea when it comes to what I consider the six traditional individual awards that I've always voted on. MVP, Coach of the Year, Rookie of the Year, Defensive Player of the Year, Most Improved Player of the Year, and Sixth Man of the Year. So I'm much better versed in those six, and I'm going to let you figure out Clutch Player of the Year. You can come up with the formula. You can come up with the official.
I appreciate that.
This league uncut formula on Clutch Player of the Year. MVP. Now, I did earlier this week, yeah. I did a whole TV essay for Bally Sports Southwest on the MVP race. I really feel as we've now moved inside a month to go, basically as of Monday, there were four full weeks left in the regular season. So we're almost down now to three full weeks left in the regular season. My feeling at this point, I think only three guys can win MVP. I think Joker's in the lead. SGA is his closest pursuer. And if the Thunder end up with the number one seed in the West, that is certainly going to help SGA's case and maybe sway some votes away from the Joker. And then I think Luka's the only other candidate who could get in there. And realistically, even though the Mavericks had a slew of injuries for the first part of the season before the trade deadline, before they changed their roster. And, you know, this speaks to some of what you were talking about with the Clutch Player of the Year award. You know, should Luka be punished for that? That he was playing with such a severely understrength roster around him? Because Luka's going to win his first scoring title. But typically, you know, I hear a lot of talk. The question gets posed often in Dallas. What seed do the Mavericks have to be for Luka to win the MVP award? And I have to say, in my experience, at least voters my age or what I would consider my generation, I never really heard voters focusing on the seeding, whether a team was fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, third. The bar always was 50 wins. Does a player have 50 wins to be in the MVP conversation? And Dallas, as I mentioned before, the Mavericks would need a 9-3 finish to get to 50 wins. But there are then the two very recent examples that people cite of MVPs who were not on teams that won 50. One of the Joker's two MVPs, they didn't win 50. I'm pretty sure that was the year, though, he had to play a lot without Jamal Murray. And then Russell Westbrook is the even more prominent example because Westbrook won MVP on a 47-win Thunder team the year after Kevin Durant left. And, of course, Russell Westbrook averaged a triple-double. He was the first player to average a triple-double, going all the way back to the Big O, Oscar Robertson. And with 47 wins and a triple-double average, that was enough for Westbrook to get through and win the MVP.
So I think for the most part, Stein, for me, I would speak for me, and I think a lot of voters feel this way, is that, you know, winning is big. Winning is significant. That's why most? Without knowing the numbers, I would say a lot of MVPs have come from teams who hold the number one seed in either conference, whatever. So with that being said, winning is important. But there have been seasons where, as you mentioned, the Joker won with a team that was in the high 40s in wins. Russell Westbrook his year. But I think those years, right, whenever an MVP comes from a team that's in the 40s in the win category, typically to me, that means that there just wasn't a clear cut another MVP candidate out there. Like it was open. It's wide open. Just like this one. I think it's pretty open. Yeah, I think the favorite right now is the Joker. But there's room. Like we see scenarios. If this situation played out this way, if this other situation over in the East plays out that way, then we can see this player leapfrog the Joker, hypothetically, right? We see scenarios of which where things can happen, you know. But a lot of times, when you see players that win from the a team from the mid 40s in the victory category, a lot of times there's just not a clear cut MVP opponent out there, prospect, I should say. So I think that's the case. But this year, yes, I think Joker is his to lose. There's still time for him to lose it. I don't know if he's going to lose it, though. And Luka, I don't know, Stein. I would like to give Tatum some love over there, what they're doing with Boston. You know, I know he's not probably in most people's top three.
Yeah, how mad is he?
I wouldn't say he's mad. He gave credit to the Joker. He actually called him out unprompted, called out the Joker, said what he's doing. He's having an unbelievable year. You can't dismiss him. He called out SGA as well. So his problem is, just like with a lot of other players, is that like he wants to know, how are you judging? He said, because for a long time, the trend has been the MVP is mostly coming from the team with the best record. And he was like, and then something changed. He said, so what is it now? You know, and that's hard. That's hard to answer, because each voter has their own different set of requirements that it takes to get their vote. So, you know, that's what he's frustrated about. But he gave credit and he acknowledged those two in particular. He definitely believes he should be in the conversation, though.
All right, I've got to do a little bit of clarifying here, because I made the mistake of trusting my memory, which, as you know, and as listeners of the show know, probably never a good idea at this point, because my memory continues to fade by the day. So it was actually the second of Jokic's MVPs in the 21-22 season that the Nuggets only won 48 games and Jokic won the MVP. Jokic beat out Joel Embiid in the 2021-22 MVP race. And the Nuggets did not have 50 wins. They were only a 6th seed. So why did Jokic win MVP that year? It wasn't just because he averaged 27 and 14 and 8. The Nuggets played the 21-22 season without Jamal Murray at all. Murray missed that entire season. And also, they were largely without Michael Porter Jr. So that's why, again, the two times, it's only happened twice since the early 80s. Before Westbrook in 2017 and before the second of Jokic's two MVPs, you had to go all the way back to the early 80s for an MVP who did not play on a 50-win team. And that was Moses Malone in Houston, early 1980s. After that, every MVP, to Tatum's point, came from a 50-win team. The two exceptions in that 40-ish year span, the two exceptions, Russell Westbrook on a 47-win Thunder team, averaging a triple-double for the season, the first triple-double since Oscar Robertson, and then Nikola Jokic on a 48-win Denver team. Okay, fine, they were seeded 6th if you want to focus on seedings, but they won 48 games playing the entire season without Jamal Murray, his main sidekick. So that's why Russ and Jokic won those MVPs. And look, I feel sympathy for Tatum because he's had a great season. He's had a great leadership season, and I'm sure this isn't fair. I said similar stuff when we were talking Coach of the Year about Joe Mazzulla, but the Celtics have been so good that just as an observer, I think it's going to work against Tatum in MVP voting, because when you look at Tatum's team, not only does he have an all-star next to him in Jaylen Brown, you've got Porzingis and Drew Holiday, former all-stars that are flip-flopping between third and fourth best player in the league. Derek White as your fifth best player, he's an incredibly valuable player as your fifth best guy. And so I think both for Tatum in MVP discussion and Mazzulla in coach of the year discussion, Boston has such quality in its top five, six guys. And we haven't even gotten to Al Horford as the sixth man, old head. My suspicion is it's probably going to work against him.
Peyton Pritchard's pretty good too. It probably will. And I think he largely understands that. He just wants to what's the criteria? How are you guys evaluating?
Well, and look, he's asking the question that voters have been asking for decades. There is no criteria.
Yeah.
You've seen the ballot. You get it. There is no listed criteria. It is an eye of the beholder. Every single voter can bring their own rules to it. And so there are no rules, and it really does change season to season, and every voter has their own criteria. So that does complicate the process, and I do certainly understand Jason Tatum's frustration.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Did I tell you about my run-in with Pat Bev a few days ago, Stein?
No, you did not.
So, do you recall, because I did this, I think we were doing this podcast then. We might have missed it. So when Pat Bev was with the Lakers, when he had just signed with the Lakers, so I was doing media day for NBA TV. And when I'm doing media day for NBA TV or TNT, they'll arrange for players to come over and spend some time with me, give me some interviews. So that year I got LeBron to come over, I got AD, and they had just signed Pat Bev, and I got Pat Bev. And so there was a question that NBA TV needed me to ask players about LeBron. So the question was, I had to ask each player who came over, what's your fondest memory of LeBron James? No. The question was, what is your best highlight moment by LeBron James? So everybody had to come and say, hey, it was the time he blocked Iguodala's shot in the finals. It was the posterized dunk over Jason Terry, whatever. So I asked everybody, everybody's cooperating. Then I go to Pat Bev. I asked Pat Bev, same question. What was your favorite highlight of LeBron James? And Pat Bev says, the block I had against him last year. So he's talking about he knew what I meant with my question, but he flipped it, talking about the block he had against LeBron. That was the best highlight you've seen of LeBron. So, and this is where I have to take some blame for this, because this is where me and Pat kind of got into it. So I go LeBron. LeBron's the last player I get on media day. And I told him what Pat Bev said. But the way I said it, I was like, hey, Bron, I'm asking players this question. And everybody's saying this. And then I said, and this fool Pat Bev is going to say, hey, the highlight I like the most is when I blocked him last year. And so that went on. LeBron laughed. It was whatever it was, right? Funny moment. And I'll tell you why I take some blame. I got too comfortable. That's what it was. I just got too comfortable. But anyways, about 3 weeks later, the Lakers come to Sacramento and they play the Kings. And after the game, I forgot who won or not. After the game, I go in the Lakers. I was doing something. I believe it was, I did a story with De'Aaron. So I didn't have time to go in the Lakers locker room after the game. And so I was like, dang, okay, it's late. I know the Lakers are probably gone. Let me go in there. So I go in the Lakers locker room and Pat Bev is only there. Nobody else is there. And so I looked in there. All right, seeing nobody was in there. And then I took off. Pat Bev was like, come call me a fool to my face. Come call me a fool to my face. And I'm like, what? Like, I'm not thinking nothing. It didn't hit me. I'm like, ooh, oh, okay. So I go in there, right? So it's me and Pat. And so Pat was like, you calling a grown man a fool? You calling a grown man a fool on TV? I said, Pat, you know I didn't mean it like that, Pat. You know, that's not the way I intended it. No, man, you don't call no grown man a fool. You know, he talking like, Pat, I apologize you took it like that, but I didn't mean no disrespect. I got too comfortable. Blah, you know, that's what. No, don't give me that apology here. You said that on TV. Apologize on TV. I said, Pat, bro, I'm ending it here, man. You can take my apology or not. That's it, man. I slipped up. I got too comfortable. That's on me. All right. And so, you know, we go our separate ways. I leave. And so Pat ends up talking about it on his podcast about probably a month later. Say, yeah, I had to check Chris Haynes and blah, 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 whatever. So it's funny, whatever. I even shared the clip. So anyways, I say all that to say that was what? 2 years ago? Year and a half ago when he was with the Lakers? So he's in Sacramento last week, and it's pregame, and all the players are shooting out on the court before the game. Pat Bev's out there shooting. He's up for the Bucks-Kings game. And he gets done shooting, and he walks by me. I'm sitting down front row. He walks by me. You ready to come work for a fool? I'm like, what? He said, you ready to come work for a fool? You know, I got money over here. You know, TNT and them ain't paying you what you should be paid. I got money over here. You ready to come work for a fool? Okay. Well, if you're ready, you know where to find me. And he took off. Sam Amick sitting next to me at this time. I'm like, Sam, was that Pat William offering me a job?
You know, we made that offer to Draymond Green, which, you know, last season, I think it clinched me a podcast executive of the year award when we offered that lopsided trade to Draymond Green. Come on our podcast and we'll come on yours. And Draymond Green did join us on This League Uncut, but I don't think he feels like he needs us on his show.
You think?
We haven't been invited to fulfill our half of that trade. So basically we got a Draymond Green appearance. Yeah. We didn't have to trade anything. Do we dare? Do you want to? I mean, I don't even know if Pat Bev would want me, but maybe he would want you to come on his pod and then he comes on our pod. Should we make that trade offer?
Well, we were talking about Draymond. I think it's safe to say, I don't think he's holding us to the other end of that deal. I think it's long gone, is forgotten about. I think
which
we're
makes
okay
it
then.
An even better trade for us.
I think we're okay. I'll be in Milwaukee early next week. I'll bring it up to Pat. I know Pat does his he has a co-host he does his pod with, and they usually, from when I see them, they usually do their pod when they're together.
Yeah, I think you have to. I think you have to be in person to be on his podcast.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. It's not, you know, I only see you twice a year, if that. So I don't know if, you know, that would be hard for both of us to be there.
Well, because let's not forget that you've been to Dallas once this season. I saw you for about 7 minutes total. And then you were assigned to a second Mavericks game and somehow you got switched off it.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll see you in the playoffs.
Yeah, hopefully.
Well, we did get to spend time together at the All-Star weekend.
That was cool. Yeah, we did.
Yeah, that's a good question. Will we end up in the same place? I mean, you obviously have no idea yet where you're going for the playoffs.
Yeah.
And, you know, I have to be honest. Traveling for the playoffs, I just don't know how much of that I'm really doing at my old age. But we'll see. We'll see what happens. We'll see what the matchups are. Let's, before we go, so as you mentioned, you have Lakers at Milwaukee.
And
on
then
Tuesday.
And then I have Tuesday. And then the next day, I'm joining Thanasis on his podcast live the next day, that Wednesday.
What is it? The Thanalysis podcast? Thanalysis, is that right?
Podcast. That's right. The Thanalysis. So I'm looking forward to getting with my other cousin doing our pod together.
Man. Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
All right, so we will have plenty to talk about next week when we do this again. We're working on some special guests as well. We're in talks with three prominent guests. I don't want to spoil who they are, but hopefully at least one will come to fruition very, very soon. That's going to do it for this edition of This League Uncut. Stein and Haynes, we'll be back with you again. We'll be back together again very, very soon. Until then, remember, please leave us a 5-star review. Please remember to rate and review the show. Follow us via Apple Podcasts or Spotify Podcasts, wherever you get your pods. And thank you, everyone, so much for being with us.
And that'll do it for us. See you next time. This League Uncut is an iHeartRadio production. Boom shakalaka! Chris Haynes and Mark Stein!
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high-rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back, plus no payments for 90 days, and take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at Kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Federally insured by NCUA.